From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And good morning from the Phoenix, Arizona area. This is the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's July, Friday the 13th, 2012, and we are broadcasting from our temporary studios, actually. We're not in the Feeding Arizona offices right now. They've made a tremendous move into a very large food bank facility that they own and will be actually owning at one point. 36,000 square feet of food thrift store for both Valley View Community Food Bank, the Valley View Community Thrift Store, and Feeding Arizona, and our offices in that complex are not completed yet. So we'll be getting there in the next several weeks, we hope, and be back out where we will be out of our temporary digs, and we're looking forward to that. Valley View Community Food Bank, of course, is where the food is always free. If you'd like to make a donation, be it monetary, food, or volunteer, please give them a call. Contact them via their website, which is valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. Get hold of Jesse Ramirez, who is the founder and executive director of the food bank. He is always willing to have whatever you can give as far as volunteer time, even if it's so much as a dollar, or food that you can drop by and bring and drop off at the food bank to help the food insecurity that's going on in the area of Phoenix, Arizona, and the Northwest Valley in particular. Now, I'm Pete Peters, and this is the Boomer the Babe Show. The Babe is off doing some things, and she's been doing so many things lately that she's not been able to be on the radio with me, but sooner or later she'll get back. And I want to remind our listeners that we do more than this is radio shows. You can contact us via boomerandthebabe.com. See everything that we do as part of our Boomer and the Babe Incorporated, including signing up for our online magazine, which is Boomer Experience Speaks. It's absolutely free. It comes out once a month, and I hope you'll enjoy that. The people that have written for Boomer Experience Speaks, many of them are show hosts that are on our network, or they are guests that were on our radio show. So a lot of interesting information there as well. It's time we stop this conversation and get to the conversation at hand with our guest for today. His name is Mike Bellamente. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
100%.
100%. Wonderful. Mike is involved in climate control with regard to what a lot of companies are doing to control their emissions and so on. We're going to get into that. It's going to prove to be a very, very, very interesting conversation. He has a background in this in some time now, and he also now is with a nonprofit, a 501c3 based out of New Hampshire called Climate Counts. Mike Bellamente, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show. How are you today?
Very good, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're certainly glad to have you. This is an issue that is in the news. It has been for some time, and of course, because it's a political season, it becomes a football when it really shouldn't be. And we may want to talk about that at some point during our conversation. But before we get going, and to kind of kick us off, why don't you give us a little what Deborah would call, if she's here, your 2-minute movie about your background, what you've been doing, how you got to be where you are now, and maybe tell us when you first got involved and interested in the climate situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're exactly right. It has become a hot topic in the news again, and I think because of the wildfires in Colorado and the power outages in D.C. And as we see on a kind of cyclical basis, when the weather gets hot, people start talking about climate change, and then they stop talking about it when those heat type of spates come through. So what we try to be is that constant for everybody. The Climate Counts was started in 2006 as the brainchild of CEO of Stonyfield Farm, Gary Hirschberg. He's well known in the yogurt arena. Perhaps you know Stonyfield Yogurt and Stonyfield Farms Dairy Products. The idea was for us to kind of be a guiding light. There's been a lot of greenwashing and a lot of companies saying, hey, look, we're green. But there's never been a kind of rating standard to show what companies are actually doing to be green, and not just have green products and recyclable products, but more from an operational standpoint. What we say across four criteria is a company measuring their greenhouse gas emissions? Do they have a commitment and a strategy to reduce those emissions? Are they reporting out in a coherent manner? So do they have a sustainability report on their website, or also known as a corporate social responsibility report? And do they take a policy stance? So are they speaking out for the need for some kind of carbon policy or energy policy that would put a price on emissions? Realistically, that's where a lot of other countries are going, and I think that's where inevitably we'll have to go if we're ever going to make any significant changes, because there's only so far we can get with the voluntary efforts to reduce emissions. Sooner or later, there's going to have to be a price for somebody making dirty products or products with dirty energy versus somebody who's taking the high road and using solely alternative energy to produce widget A and widget B. So I got into this, it was probably 6-7 years ago now. I started with Climate Council last year, but I originally was in the private sector. I was working for a communications company in Colorado, Level 3 Communications. It was a Warren Buffett funded venture, and I tell you, we were all supposed to get rich off that one, Pete. It was supposed to be the next, the next big thing, next Microsoft, whatever you want to call it. We were, we built a 16,000-mile fiber optic network, and we were holding the voice traffic of all the big boys, AT&T and Sprint and whatnot. And then the internet bubble burst, and a lot of my friends got laid off. I was able to keep the job, but about that time, I was like, man, this is a grind, and it's not really inherently fulfilling from what I expected. If I'm going to have to work many, many years, I kind of want to come home at the end of the day and be feel like I've done something. So went back to school, got my MBA in Scotland at the University of Edinburgh. And then said, hey, I focused on sustainability over there and a little bit on sustainable business and corporate social responsibility. And I said, this can't be a hippie-driven, a bunch of nonprofits getting together asking people to change their ways. It's got to come from the private sector. It's got to be – we got to figure out some market-driven approaches to a problem that's what I consider is something that we just have to deal with. It doesn't have to be alarmist, oh, we're all going to die tomorrow, the kind of rhetoric that you hear from some of the environmental extremists. But I think that it is something that we have to take a measured tone with and say, okay, let's get together. We've got some good groups around here, like Businesses for Innovative Climate and Energy Policy, and some other good groups that are getting together and say, okay, how do we solve this as the private sector? Or how do we at least work with government regulators to figure out what's amenable or what's acceptable in terms of policy. So I guess that's probably more than the 2-minute video. That's probably the 4-minute video, but
that's fine.
Hopefully that gives you an idea of our background and how we've come to be.
No, absolutely. It's very, very informative, and I'm glad you did it. It seems to me, and let me just use this as a jumping off point as far as what little I know about green. I mean, I know you recycle your newspapers, recycle your cans, recycle your glass. And then here in Arizona, our trash pickup companies here are contracted to the various cities. And some of them have, you dump it all in one truck, but then where they dump it into this sorter, and this massive sorter breaks it all out.
Sure.
And there are some companies, I know that because I had those people on the show probably 3 years ago when that sorter was just coming to Arizona and coming to the Phoenix area. And then the other thing that I've noticed is And I heard this somewhere. I'm one of these newscasts, and I don't know how much credence to give it. But there's a major, somewhat major company that does things like window glass cleaners and floor cleaners and whatever else. And they are very, very intent on letting everybody know that they are putting this stuff in recyclable bottles, and bottles that are made from recycled plastics and so on and so forth. But the stuff that's in there is toxic as the day is long. And I'm don't breathe the stuff in the room when you're using that to clean your furniture, dust your furniture, or whatever the case might be.
Sure.
And at one point they're trying to put forward a face that we're environmentally conscious and that we're in tune with what should be done, and we're really good guys. On the other hand, it's still profit motive on the back end, and that's all that they're concerned about because we know what they're putting in there. Does your company, Climate Counts, do you monitor any of that type of thing?
We don't get as granular as the product level. I tell folks that a resource to look at the product level is Good Guide. So that's goodguide.com for your listeners. And they actually look at not only what is in the ingredients to whether it's a window cleaner or whether it's a candy bar, but it also looks at the packaging around that, and it looks at the company as a whole. And they actually use some of our data at the company level. But you bring about a great point, and that's the kind of double talk that goes on. And I actually just wrote, and it just got published, an article on Huffington Post called Protecting the Business, how some companies are resorting to double talk on climate change because of what you just mentioned, the profit motive. Hey, companies are in business to make money. And if they can just as easily say, hey, we're green on one side, and the marketing people have a great savvy in creating products that seem absolutely green in their packaging and how they're recycled plastics and things of that nature. But on the opposite side, they have a heck of a crack legal team or lobbying team that goes and promotes or lobbies against policies that would be environmentally true or true to their environmental message. They're going to do that. They're going to do whatever the path of least resistance. And if they can do both, so be it. So there's no rules against talking out of both sides of your mouth. But I think if there's a good company that walks the walk from the window cleaner and the household cleaning products. And I just met with Drummond Lawson from this company. It's called Method. So you might have seen their their liquid detergents and some of their household cleaning products. But not only does their packaging look at embrace some of the recycled principles of packaging, but they also, the ingredients are non-toxic and safe to use within your home and around your kids. So,
I was just going to say that that reminds me of that dilemma I guess you could say they're at crossroads with regard to profitability, marketability, and actual getting it done type of a thing. I mean, it reminds me years ago of my dad, rest his soul, that said when he was working for the Ford Motor Company back in Michigan. And he said that they were charged with cutting up small cars, Fiat, Toyotas, whatever, MGs, whatever they were, and try to make something, a prototype of something that could get great gas mileage. I mean, we're talking way back. We're talking 30. Oh, heck, we're talking 40 years ago.
And, yeah, my dad had an MG. I love that thing.
but they did is they cut them all up. They put them up. They ran them around the test track at Dearborn, Michigan. And he said, man, he says, we got these things that go 75 miles to the gallon. Documentable, 75 miles to the gallon. He says, and then the damn designers and the marketers got involved, and all of a sudden it drops to 22. Because they're adding weight and they're adding style, but they were saying we can make anything go a long, long way on a gallon of gas, but the profit wasn't going to be there because it wasn't going to look necessarily really, really pretty. It was going to be functionally fine, but it wasn't going to be sexy.
Well, and that's it, man. I tell you, if you're a farmer in the heartland, or you're just a guy that loves his trucks, I mean, you're not going to buy a Prius that looks like some kind of futuristic matchbox car. You're going to want a truck that has the right torque and the right towing capacity, and you know, you got to have form, you got to have function and form, you know. So we got to find a better alternative all around. But you're exactly right. It's funny, you know. It's the old adage of Thomas Edison could have invented a light bulb that would last forever, but geez, then they wouldn't sell too many light bulbs, would they?
That planned obsolescence thing has to figure in there somewhere along the line. Otherwise, nobody's making any money at all.
Absolutely, right.
How do you see progress in terms of how these companies are actually getting involved in this? I mean, are they doing it wholeheartedly? Are they all in, or are they just kind of doing it superficially so they can say that they're paying attention?
Yeah, honestly, Pete, I think it really runs the gamut. The companies that we rate, so we rate 150 companies, consumer-facing or consumer brands, across 16 different industry sectors. So your hotels, your electronics, your airlines, your appliances, and it really does. It's I think by industry it runs the gamut, and then I think you know, all across every company, it really runs a broad spectrum on how serious the company is. And it starts with the board, and it starts with the CEO, the highest levels. And if they have a commitment, if they have a vision that has some type of environmental component to it, it gets a lot more stock, and it gets a lot more resources put to it. What you're finding these days is that it's not just because these are consumer brands, they want to appear, at least appear, to your point earlier, that they're being green. But not all, above and beyond just having the brand reputation, they also, from an investor standpoint, so investors are starting to look at this now. Ernst & Young came out with a report earlier this year that said in 2011, shareholders' resolutions related to social and environmental concerns were up 40%. I think we're represented 40% of all resolutions last year, meaning that environment is very much on the minds of investors. And so it's not just reputation, but it's also investor or risk, avoiding risks of not being invested in, as well as the actual risks that might be material to your business. So if you're operating a manufacturing plant and there's going to be a rise in energy costs because of a lower production of oil, then increases in costs are going to come out of your bottom line, just as if your trade routes are going to be impacted by severe weather patterns. You're going to lose money if your product gets swept away in a tornado. So all these companies are starting to look at this from a risk perspective, and I don't think it's just as much about the reputation anymore. And one last note on that. So our top performing company this past year was Unilever. So that's a maker of Dove and Lipton iced tea and Vaseline. They, if you look up about their CEO, and his name fails me at the moment, but Paul something, he's a Danish guy, absolutely brilliant guy. He realizes that this has to be brought by the private sector in terms of how we're combating climate change. And he's integrated, they have this what's called the Sustainable Living Plan. And from the guy that makes the shampoo, the chemicals that go into the shampoo, as well as the guy that's making the packaging to package the shampoo, as well as the guy that's running the distribution center, everybody in the organization has an environmental metric that they're tied to. And they get performance evaluated on their performance to meet those metrics, as well as incentives financially to achieve their metrics. So it's that kind of thing, that holistic approach, that whole systems approach, that really drives this for the companies that are doing really well, as opposed to some companies that might just have, you know, a green team in their marketing department or a green team in their PR department that essentially, you know, if you just have one guy that's saying something about environment within your organization, obviously you're not going to have a lot of impact organization-wide. So, like I said, some companies are doing really well to walk the walk, and others are kind of just throwing a little something at it, you know?
So it does really start at the top and work its way down through the organization.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah. Let's take one of these areas. I think this is something that you mentioned earlier. How, when you go in and you're looking at a hotel, okay, pick a major hotel.
Marriott.
Marriott, that's fine. Yeah, what do you look at with regard to where you look for environmental impact with whatever it is that they may be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So you have with a hotel, you have essentially the rooms comprise a huge portion of the energy consumption. And when we talk about what we do with climate change, right, we try to boil climate change down into what the major impact of climate change is from what the scientists are telling us. As we were saying in the pregame, or as I was saying, you know, I work at University of New Hampshire with a bunch of climate scientists who have made this their business for the past, their entire life. And these guys, you know, they've drawn it down to, hey, it's greenhouse gas emissions, which is basically coming from, you know, carbon emissions from burning of fossil fuels, as well as some methane and some, you know, other types of greenhouse gases, but primarily carbon. So when we look at what companies, like, say, a hotel, we're looking at energy consumption and how they're managing that energy consumption, or if they have on-site combustibles for a manufacturer, that would be more the case. But when you look at a hotel, it's more about do they have climate control in their rooms? So as a hotel guest might leave the room, perhaps the heat or cooling automatically turns off. Some hotels have integrated some sensing technology into their bathrooms, into their lighting installations, and things of that nature. And also the common areas. How are they treating their common areas? Are they using some type of climate control, or when I say climate control, so heating and air control in their common areas as well. And from a hotel standpoint, there's only so far they can get, obviously, before comfort becomes an issue. And it goes back to our earlier point. Hotel, a guest isn't going to stay at a hotel though. You're sweltering in heat because they don't want to use air conditioning. But at the same point, perhaps they're using a high-efficiency air conditioner, or perhaps they're tied into a cogeneration facility where they're doing combined heating and cooling. So there are ways to reduce your impact and your emissions impact. It's just about how you get there.
So you rate 150 name brands. So when you do this rating, what are you rating them on? I mean, as far as are you rating, for instance, whether or not this particular soap is environmentally sound or safe, or are you rating that the manufacturer of the soap is using environmental practices? Because you mentioned was it Lever Brothers or
Unilever.
Unilever for Dove and so on. Now, are you rating each individual product or just their overall manufacturing process?
So it's really at the company level. And they might have owned and operated manufacturing facilities, or they might, kind of subcontract that out to another operation for that. But what it comes down to is do they have their house in order? I mean, so even if they're subcontracting their manufacturing out, they still should know how that manufacturer is, if it's in India or China, you know, how that operation is set up. Do they have controls to account for their emissions? Are they looking at certain principles or ways they can invest in tightening up on those emissions controls? And it's become a massive industry. So emissions accounting, and there's obviously a whole industry of consultants out there who can help reduce emissions. But for the most part, when we're rating these companies, we use a 22 criteria scorecard, and the questions we'll look at from the top level to the granular. So do you have a CEO that's saying, hey, climate change is an important thing, we need to combat this as an organization, as a society? And you'd be surprised, Pete. I mean, almost 80% of the companies that we rate have a CEO that has a message on the front of their sustainability report that says, climate change is an issue, we need to deal with it. So we look at it from top level. Do they have the top level support to do things, and then we look at operationally, what kind of controls do they have in place, what are they measuring, are they using a calculator that's so a greenhouse gas emissions calculator that's well respected, or are they using back of the envelope calculations, do they look at their suppliers? If they're supplying from what's called, so are they looking at their scope 3 emissions? So scope 3 would be their upstream and downstream. So if you have somebody, you know, harvesting cotton for your pair of jeans and your Levi's, you know, you got to know how much water is going into harvesting that cotton, how much energy is going into and fuels and emissions are going into harvesting that cotton. And that's a very difficult and costly process to do. So obviously some companies are really doing well at this, the ones that are investing heavily, which takes money, obviously. And there's others that, you know, don't, again, just throw a little wave at it and say, okay, that's good enough. That'll get the environmentalists off our back. So we try to be the discerning eye for consumers and say, here's what company A is doing versus company B. We make a very, very pronounced point not to be I don't want to say we're a watchdog organization. I don't see us as somebody who shames companies. We really try to highlight the companies that are doing well on this and showcase the leaders and the ones that are really innovative in their thinking and how they're approaching the problem.
So if you have company A that is in the widget manufacturing business, and you have company B, their primary competitor, that's in the widget manufacturing business, and company A is doing all kinds of really neat things as far as what they're doing, and the others are doing, and company B is doing some things, but not as much as A. Is it safe to say then that what you do is you will pronounce or point out rather the fact that company A is doing all of these things and company B is doing these things, and let people decide for themselves where they want to put their dollar on?
I think you pretty much boiled it down to exactly what we do. We want to give folks the tools to make the decisions on their own.
Right. Well, what came to my mind when you were saying that was that question. And number two, it was just a case where we had a fellow that was, he's since moved on and started his own publication in Bismarck, North Dakota. But he was with a local political weekly paper. It was called Capital Times, and he was managing editor. And he would be on our show every 2 weeks. And as you well imagine, what's going on in Arizona with all the things, the stories you hear, that's just the surface. But nonetheless, his job as a managing editor, and what he took to be his job, is he reported everything that was going on at the Capitol, good, bad, or indifferent. This is what this representative did. This is what this representative did. Which one do you think did the right thing? We're not going to take a position. We're just going to bring the message and let you, the public, decide.
100%.
Where you're going to put your next vote. So it's kind of the same thing with you're doing. Where are they going to put their next vote? You vote with your dollars.
Yeah, that's exactly what we say. Vote with your choices and voices, you know? So you make the choices with your pocketbook.
How do you think overall the United States matches up with other large countries, global powers, if you want to call them that, in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough. I think you know, we are a unique bunch, Americans. I mean, we love our individuality. We love our freedom, and we don't want to be told what to do. We absolutely, as we're seeing, don't want government telling. As you're seeing with the healthcare rebuttals, you don't want government telling us what we have to do. And when it comes to environment, unfortunately, it's become a matter of politics. It's become a right versus left, a blue versus red issue, when it hasn't always been that. Many people forget that President Nixon was the one who started the Environmental Protection Agency. He also was very fundamental in getting the Clean Water and Clean Air Act passed. It's only within the last 10, 15 years that it's really become a left issue because of, Gore being involved in the Inconvenient Truth, and then obviously Reagan taking down the wind and solar panels that Jimmy Carter had put on the White House. It takes a crisis for things to change in America, and I think unless we see the writing on a wall, which we haven't, we saw Katrina, we see some weather-related disasters here and there, it's not enough for us to say, well, we really need something to happen. And I can't say, I think we need a carbon price, and I think we need something that's going to level the playing field for manufacturers, but I don't like big government any more than the next guy. As much as private sector can figure this out for themselves, that's what I'd want to see. So in terms of how we match up to other global leaders, I think we're very different from other global powers in that we are kind of this individualistic, we want what we're going to want and it's all for me and none for all type thing, where I'd say the Germanys of the world and the Indias of the world are more of a, hey, this is a collective problem as a collective society. We need to do what's good for the good of the group. And obviously they have more of a socialist-leaning approach to things. And in this sense, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I don't think that having a government say, okay, everybody, from now on, every new building has to be made of 60% renewable material or recycled materials. You have to run your heating and cooling on 40% of renewable energy, and have the building codes and have the energy policy in place to support what you want to have happen, which is you want to arrive at clean energy. They're one of the biggest users of solar power, and that's funny for Germany. If you've ever been to Germany, you know that it's not a very sunny place, but they have the incentives in place to prop up the industry, and that's exactly what it is. And it's grown so much that the government's having to prop it up less and less, and they're in as much financial turmoil as the rest of the world, so they're having to pull back on some of their earlier initiatives, but that doesn't mean they were wrong for trying them with their feed-in tariffs and some of the energy producing or energy incentivizing things to get clean energy. So I think we're falling behind. I don't think we're seen as a leader in clean energy and clean tech as much as we should be, and I certainly don't think we're a leader on how we're approaching climate change in a productive and kind of positive manner.
Well, I think, for whatever it's worth, my opinion is that as long as these people are concerned that their ox is going to get gored, they're not going to be involved, or they're going to
absolutely
they're going to hold back. But it seems to me that people, you and I, the regular folks out here, should at some point, hopefully, we could realize and let our own biases go by the wayside. And realize that if there's a regulation to do this and there's not sufficient industry to do it, there will become sufficient industry and that will create the jobs. And there's going to be manufacturing that's going to be able to be done to take care of making sure that we get whatever it's needed so that we can meet those rules and regulations. It makes just so much sense that when we're sitting here struggling with people out of work across this country, that we're not trying to find something that we could get them to work, and they don't have to be that skilled worker. I mean, we're talking here some assembly jobs. We're talking about some manufacturing stuff that used to be done making automobiles. Now it's done making solar panels or whatever the case may be.
100%. You're exactly right. You know what's really the problem there is that North Dakota. You mentioned North Dakota earlier.
Yeah.
The fact that they've you know there's been a huge boom, oil boom. I'm sure you're aware of in North Dakota,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And it's meant exactly what you're saying, a boon of jobs as well. And you know, I think that it's very important that we find jobs, but we have to find the right jobs. And unfortunately, North Dakota and the oil shales, as much as that's clean, that's the energy, and that's you know black gold, whatever you want to call it, that's only exacerbating the problem to an extent. So the fact that you know we have this nascent kind of green energy or clean tech energy in the United States, when you find a whole lot of easy to access oil in the ground, it's essentially like finding, you know, let's say a cocaine addict finding a suitcase of pure Colombian uncut on the side of the highway for free. It's kind of pushing the wrong behaviors because it's a lot easier to access that oil than it is to come up with a new energy source and then plug that new energy source, you know, into the grid or into new transmission lines and get that wind power from the prairies to where it matters most in the cities, when it's a lot easier to just, you know, pull out a barrel of oil, refine it, and then, you know, send it to wherever people need gasoline. So it doesn't help our case when, you know, glaciers are melting and it's revealing the existence of a lot more oil out there.
That's true. And the amazing thing is, as I understand what I hear, and who knows what you hear of how much truth there is to it, but one side will sit there and tell you that we don't get the benefit of that oil anyhow. It goes into the world mix, and we don't get. I mean, it's not like it's our oil, and we keep our oil. It goes.
Sure.
It goes out there for world distribution to be affected. The price to be determined by whoever the oil cartels are.
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
yeah.
What? What benefit are we really getting other than the fact, sure, there are some jobs there, which is good. I appreciate the fact that there's jobs. But down the road, it's sort of like pacifying your immediate need and forgetting about the long-term consequence.
I totally agree with you. Absolutely. And it's we're so good at that. We're you know, you saw it with the financial collapse and the housing collapse. People, hey, I want to buy a house. So what if I can't afford it? So what if I can't put any money down? I'm just going to buy a house. Well, that's satisfying your immediate need without looking long term at whether you can really afford that house. And that's what we're doing with the kind of future of our children right now. Hey, I want air conditioning, I want, you know, a Humvee, or I want the biggest car, but I don't care. I don't want to sacrifice any of my comforts and my creature comforts today for something that might or might not benefit my children tomorrow. And that's the way we've got to change that degree of thinking. And I think it's going to be a generational shift, honestly, Pete. I was down in New Jersey visiting my nephew a few months ago. And he's like, you know, you could see the anger. He's like, humans are killing the environment, you know, because they're teaching this stuff in science class and greenhouse warming effect and all that. And he's, you know, he is so adamant. He yells at my brother if he's not recycling, you know. And I think it's just like, you know, when we were kids and telling my dad to wear a seatbelt or telling him to stop smoking. Well, you know, how often do you see kids really smoking cigarettes these days or not wearing their seatbelts? So I think it's really going to be, like I said, that generational change that hopefully we won't have the uphill battle that we're facing with this silly politics right now.
Yeah, well, I can see it in my family also. I'm talking to you, who is obviously an expert in this field and could come into my house and look around and say, my God, what are you doing here? You're killing us.
I don't judge, Pete. I don't judge.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that. I mean, there's a lot of things that I could do. But my daughter does more. My 37-year-old daughter does more. And they're certainly much more environmentally conscious than I have ever been. And my granddaughters, 6 and 3, are doing even more. And so you're right. It's growing. It's growing. And the younger second and third generation from me are going to be much more involved in it. But my question then becomes, can we wait that long?
Yeah.
Where does that fit in the time compendium here of when the whole thing's going to come and crash down around us? Is it going to get done in time based on that kind of a increased awareness?
Yeah. Oof. You know, if I were only the clairvoyant I wish to, I'd set out to be, you know. It's the toughest part. You know, you hear, like I said, we do a lot of work, Climate Counts does, and working with the university here at New Hampshire, University of New Hampshire, and we have a very great climate science outfit in the Earth, Oceans, and Space department here on campus. And these guys are crack shot climate scientists. They see this stuff. They tell me, you know, the temperatures that we're seeing in New Hampshire now, we're going to start seeing more 100-degree days, which is pretty much unheard of in New Hampshire. You get one or two, but getting weeks at a time of 100-degree days isn't natural. And people do say, oh, it's all cyclical. Don't worry, it's coming back. Yeah, climate is cyclical. Absolutely. We've had ice ages. We had heat stages in the past of the Earth's existence, which is 4 billion years old. But now we're witnessing, I mean, there's data and there's evidence. And when you have data and evidence and science to support these things, where you say, okay, here's where man started burning fossil fuels in the 1800s, aligning very much closely with the Industrial Revolution, and saying, okay, from that point, we had, and this is the point where we had, 1 billion people something like 1 billion people in 1800. Fast forward to 2012, where we have 7 billion people on the Earth. And all those people, or a large percent of those people, are using fossil fuels at an ever-increasing rate. And you gradually see that, you know, they call it the hockey stick graph or whatever you want to call it, this carbon parts per million going upward and upward. So if you've heard about 350.org, 350 parts per million is where the number of carbon molecules per million that is said to, if we go beyond that, it's going to be irreversible effects on our weather patterns, on our agriculture, on everything that is affected by the weather and the climate. We've exceeded 350. We're closer to 400 now. And this is like 20 years ago, we were at 280 or something like that. So we're seeing an ever-increasing kind of exposure or ever-increasing amounts of carbon in the atmosphere. And the knock-on effects of that is this warming thing that's happening. Well, if you keep going at a certain rate, there is a point at which, and they say it's probably by 2050, if we don't reach a certain point by 2050, then we're in real deep trouble. But that's like, you know, that's pretty far out there. And people say to themselves, well, this 2050 is still 35 years away or 38 years away. So they're not going to think about it. But the real detriment is that we got to start doing something now. We can't get to 2049 and say, oh, yeah, okay, let's stop using coal and oil today. We've got to start building that ramp, that on-ramp, that'll make it an easy transition. The longer we wait and the longer we bullcrap around with silly politics, so the harder it's going to be to change the ways of society. So,
well, this is what came to my mind when you said it's 38 years away. The fact is, it's only 38 years away. I have a daughter who is 37 years old. On her next birthday, she will be 38 years old. And I know for a fact that I brought her home from the hospital with her mother yesterday. The point is, I can sit here and talking to you and listen to what you're saying about climate change, and I can pin it to my daughter who's going to be 38 years old, and I can say, I know how fast those 38 years went by. I know how old I was when she was born, and now I'm 65 freaking years old. Come on, folks. You know, and I'm going, man, where did my life go? I'm on the downhill side. Now, I hope to live to be 80 or 90 years old in a healthy body or a healthy state and be able to think and talk and do things like that.
but I've got no guarantees by this juncture in my life. I mean, I could have done the same thing to my body and my life that people are doing to the earth. And all that happens is when the fall apart starts to happen, it becomes exponentially faster.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine, because I know what I'm facing physically with regard to a couple of things that I've got going, and the thing has got to be at least that, if not magnified, when you're talking about the earth in and of itself, the environment.
That's a great way to see it, Pete. Honestly, it's funny. I'm 36 actually, and I play hockey. I want to be able to play hockey again.
I'd love to be able to play hockey again.
Oh, I tell you, it's great. It's still a great passion, a great outlet for me. But I tell you, you twist an ankle or you twist a knee, and the healing process takes six times as long as it did when I was 18 years old. And that's a great analogy, great metaphor that you use, that what we do to our bodies can very much be seen as what we're doing to our home and our Mother Earth right here, right? It's going to be a lot longer and a lot harder healing process if the longer we wait to kind of find solutions to this stuff. So it's just so silly to me to see the negativity and the mudslinging and all that stuff that goes on at this. It doesn't help in one sense of the word. I mean, to create so much negativity around an issue instead of, hey, let's kumbaya, let's get together and let's figure this out. I don't see what the point is, and try to throw spokes and everything that's a wrench in the spokes of everything that's trying to be good here.
Well, it seems to be the way of the world. It's certainly the way of the world as we see it on TV unfolding in this electoral year. They don't give a damn about anything except feathering their own nest, their own private interests and their own self-aggrandizement and whatever it is. And it just goes on. And you wonder what their motivation could be. They say what their motivation is, and I don't believe them one damn bit.
Re-election.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's that old power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. it's pretty amazing stuff. Let's get back a little more on topic and stay within this politics. Otherwise, you and I are going to have a coronary thinking about that. So aside from your scoring that you do, how else does Climate Counts try to achieve the various goals of education and outreach? I mean, that seems to be to me that it would be a large part of what you do as well.
Yeah, I think that's at the core of our mission. It's not just so the ratings process is very important to us, but what we're also realizing, we have a pretty good following. We have a pretty strong following, and who reads our newsletters, who likes us on Facebook, all that stuff. But the biggest impact we could have is having some of these major corporations take up the torch and do our professing for us. So have the Unilevers saying the things that they're saying, and having the Levi's of the world, and having some of those great companies out there, like the Stonyfields of the world, say the things that need to be said. Because with a nonprofit budget, as you can imagine, we don't have the marketing dollars that some of these big fellows have. So that's one aspect. We've been working more collaboratively with some of the companies we rate, making sure to keep that line distinguished, that you don't get any benefit for working with us and helping us spread the word. I mean, our rating system is very black and white. We're very transparent on how we score, and anybody can go in and see our methodologies and how we did it. So we do try to collaborate with some companies or some of the better companies out there. In fact, a couple weeks ago, as I mentioned, we were in Berkeley, California, and we had a peer learning forum for sustainability professionals, so VP directors of major consumer brands, some of which we rate, some are just partners of ours through our Industry Innovators Program. And we got them in a room and said, hey, what are some of the big challenges? And largely what came up, not to tell tales out of school, but it was pretty obvious, is that, it's very hard to make climate friendly a marketing benefit. So, style is a marketing benefit, like you were talking about those Fiats earlier and the MGs and cutting them down. So style, quality, and price. You know, those are the things that are hot to people. Those are when people go into a store, they want something that tastes good, they want something that's cheap, they want something that looks cool. I mean, and they want something that's, you know, cost competitive. An environmental benefit is merely an add-on to that. And it's they're realizing they have to figure out new and innovative ways to have the be price competitive. So almost like, hey, satisfy the baseline criteria first and be environmental. That's how you get it done. So working with companies is one aspect on the education and outreach. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we're working a little bit with ACE, the Alliance for Climate Education. They're a great group. ACE is out in California, and they have these assemblies. So if you have grandkids that are about to be in middle school and high school, they do high school assemblies where they, around the country, they have different outposts, and they sign up for, or they have schools sign up for the assemblies that kind of give a very 101 on what climate change is, how it's happening, and how you can do one thing to change the behaviors of you and your family. So we work with groups like that. We work, obviously, with universities. We have this very good partnership with the University of New Hampshire. We have some other university partnerships, working with MBA students that would like to learn more about sustainabilities, and doing on-campus outreach, doing on-campus events that say, which company do you think is more environmentally or the better climate leader? And it's funny what some of these kids come up with, and give them some tasks to work on, and give them some contests to do, and it make a bit of a gamesmanship out of it. So we try to make everything we do as simplistic as possible, knowing that we live in a 140 character society world, a Twitter society, where you know kids are thinking about one thing one minute and they're on to something 100% different in the next minute, right? So
that's right.
So to capture their interest, we want to make sure that we say it as concisely as possible. We'll make our message very easy to understand. With our rating system, if your listeners go to climatecounts.org or download our iPhone app, essentially it's the scorecard is broken down into a 0 to 100 scale. So 0 being the worst, 100 being the best. Nobody's ever achieved 100. Our best scoring company achieved an 88 last year, which is Unilever. And then we break it down into whether a company's stuck, starting, or striding. So on the starting gate, you know, if they're stuck, they're red. If they're starting, which is, you know, 12 or 13 points to 49 points, they're yellow. And if they're striding, they're green, and that's 50 points and above. So make it very easy for the kids and for them to understand, and then to take that home to mom and dad, knowing that kids influence household purchasing decisions as much as they do, to say, hey, mom, have you thought about buying from this company, company X as opposed to company B? Have you thought about going to maybe Starbucks versus McDonald's because they score better on this scorecard? That's the kind of change we're looking to effect here.
It's amazing. As you were talking about that and having it accessible to folks with regard to the ratings and the stuck striding and what was the other
starting.
One? Starting.
Starting.
Starting. It reminded me of a book that I did an interview of the author here on the show. His name is Alan UK, and he has a book called Buying America Back. And what he is involved in is the deficits and the trade ratios. And he, in his book, has how our trade ratios match up with all the countries in the world. For instance, because you mentioned Germany before, we can see that on this thing that exactly what the ratio is and whether we're upside down or whether we're right side up, if we're trading more or trading less with them. And it reminded me of this because it sounds similar to what you're doing. It's absolutely there for somebody to see. So now when you're looking at something and you say, okay, I want to buy a Nokia phone, you can go look up Nokia phone. You can say, oh, that comes from Finland. And Finland is causing me to have whatever the trade ratio is and who else that they deal with. And we have a deficit of $1.7 billion, exports to Finland of $2.2 billion, and imports to the U.S. of $3.9 billion. So we have a $1.7 billion deficit. And we can see what we're doing, and we can see what we're doing to ourselves. And it sounds like your website does the same thing as regards the environment.
I think so.
That's amazing. I think that's just wonderful. How can we get more publicity out about your website and these 150 companies?
I tell you, just putting it. I think you mentioned you have a newsletter that you sent out.
Right.
Anything that Boomer and the Babe can do is much appreciated. Get it out to your listeners. Let them know that these types of conversations are great for our exposures. I mean, there's very few organizations like us that, we say we're kind of a pro-business environmental organization. We need businesses to succeed. We need them to have the jobs so we can, all live and have that society we want. We just have to do it in a more responsible manner. So, absolutely. I really appreciate it. Just getting our website up there and getting folks to know about what we're doing. That's really the most I can ask for or hope for.
Well, I'm gonna ask you right here while we're on the air if you'd be interested in writing an article for our online magazine, and you can mention all that in there and talk about what it is that you do and so on and so forth. I think that would be interesting stuff for people to listen to that didn't hear this interview. And then when they see it in the magazine, we'll have a link to this interview on our Blog Talk site as well. So they'll be able to get to it any number of ways. And we'll talk about how you can use it, and I'll give you a call after the show. But that might be something that we should talk about.
I'd be delighted, absolutely.
We'll talk about it. I will call you after the show. One of the notes, and you mentioned it before, and you mentioned your introduction, you've talked about it a couple of times. You say you have a young child. And what do you think of? I mean, I said, I've got a daughter who's 37. I've got granddaughters who are 6 and 3. What do you think about as far as the environment and the future as it regards your child? And does that have an impact on what you do?
I think all of us, right? All of us want what's best for our children. And even if I don't plan to have grandchildren for a long time, I'm going to want what's best for them as well. You know, you want what's best for your family and friends of today, as well as your family and friends that will be around tomorrow. I think that was maybe one of the reasons I kind of got into this business. I figured I was a business guy. I was a marketing major with a German minor, actually. And it wasn't until I was 28 years old that I kind of refocused my destination and my career on the environment. And I think that it wasn't noble. It wasn't anything but what I wanted to do. But I was saying to myself at the time, well, if not me, then who? If not now, then when? That kind of thing where you say, geez, I'm no smarter than anybody else or no dumber than anybody else. I mean, I could get into this industry and take it by the horns, you know. So I wish more people would just say, stop hoping that somebody else is going to take care of the problem and then start making more, decisions that can get us to the point where we need to be. So kind of taking the initiative on their own. And I think I absolutely look, for future generations, and I'm slightly optimistic that they can be the ones that make the change for us. But am I optimistic overall? Not with the state of our political condition, and with how much, I mean, our political system is run by big oil, run by big coal, and just weaning ourselves off of an addiction we've had for 300 years. It's very difficult to do, and it's not going to happen overnight. So it's with the spirit of the good people that listen to your show and that seek out organizations like ours that are going to be the change agents here.
Well, I liken it to what I said at the beginning of the show, that I say at the beginning of any show that we do with regard to the food bank. Anything you want to do that can help, regardless of how much, how large, how often, as anything at all that you do is of benefit. So anything that we as individuals do, even if it's recycling the cans only once a month and just throwing them out with the trash in a mixed bag every other trash pickup. Anything, regardless of how small, I imagine it's helpful.
Absolutely.
Well, I've said my piece.
As have I. Let's go grab a beer, Pete.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah, and we'll probably drink it out of a beer bottle.
Yeah, recycled containers, right? Draft, only out of the draft.
Yeah, there you go, absolutely. Well, Mike Bellamenti, I tell you, it's been a fascinating hour talking with you about recycling and climate control and your company Climate Counts and everything else that you're involved in and the good efforts and the good fight that you're fighting. And I'm pleased to say that I know you now and look forward to talking to you again very shortly here, even yet this morning. So thanks again for being a guest on the show, and I really do appreciate your talking to us.
Hey, I feel like I've been really privileged to be on the show, and I hope to do more with you guys in the future. Thanks a lot, Pete.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show here on Blog Talk Radio. As always, we try to bring our listeners something to think about, and we certainly done it today with Mike Bellamenti from Climate Counts. So you can go to Climate Counts and see everything they're doing with regard to helping the environment and trying to save the environment. And also look at the rankings and look who the companies are and the brands are that are actually working towards getting themselves to be more sustainable in the area of the environment. So take a look at those. We're going to be back on again next week, of course, the usual time, 10 o'clock in the morning, Monday through Friday. And you can listen to the Boomer the Babe every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on Blog Talk. And you can also listen to the archives on blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. Check us out at boomerthebabe.com. Please sign up for our online newsletter. See everything that makes up the Boomer the Babe Incorporated. And please make sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And we'll see you next week. And have a great weekend, everybody. To the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.